You're listening to the Premier Podcast Network.
Every day is boat day for you.
I don't have a boat.
I'm a boater. What can I say?
Hello and welcome to the Filter Free Podcast. I am your host, TJ Stevens.
Well, problematic.
Out of my left earbud.
Getting off to a banging start here, though.
Joining me, as always,
Step Ends.
Dollar Bill Dave.
I touched myself.
I just need to clip that. Just Dave. Leading for, I touched myself.
And Timmy C.
Goo, goo, goo.
Dave's is awesome. And he got a new hat and it's hilarious. Are you drunk? Yes or no? And it's marked on the right hand side for both.
Time limit draws. Get my panties wet. I love it.
We've covered this butt wipe on a few different occasions.
Butt wipe?
You don't call people butt wipe anymore?
No. I'm not seven. Good news is I've limited the producer's amount to screw us over this, so we're actually going to get to sing along with the songs now. You are welcome.
You got to play for your right to party!
Hello, and welcome to the Filter Free Podcast. I'm your host, CJ Stevens.
Depends.
Joining me, as always, Dollar Bill Dave.
Big piece of skin came off my lip today.
It looks like your whole bottom lip came off today.
Which set?
Don't advise lip cancer. Kind of sucks.
Don't advise it? Like someone's at the store picking up lip cancer?
Nope. I don't advise it.
Timmy C, how are your lips?
Who? Which set?
Yes.
The Beaver Cleaver.
Okay. Beaver Cleavage. You can tell we don't normally record on Sundays. Please remember and subscribe and rate the show wherever you get your podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at FF Podcast, on Instagram at Filter Free Podcast. Follow our network on Twitter at Ram Sports Net and Timmy Dave. You guys have picked up the slack for me in the last few weeks because I've got a lot of shit going on, but there is I don't even know what's all on there anymore. There's so much shit.
We're covering just about every era of wrestling with watch-alongs and nails. I still don't get that one.
Nails was terrible.
He was a terrible human, I think, beating the boss man
character.
Like that.
He was a decent character.
No. Had a terrible haircut, too, by the way.
He did.
Worse than Dave's.
Did you see the one he had before nails?
No.
Because he looked like He-Man.
Yeah, that'd be pretty badass. If his character was He-Man, that'd be badass. But if you go to patreon.com/ramnetwork, you will get
Him Guy.
You will get nails and lip cancer too. You will also get Legends. No, let's rethink this. Football is getting paid with Tim and Dave. Evolution of Evil. Wrestling with commercials. All of our events, Talking Wrestling with Pondwater Dave, TNA Top 10, World Class Flashback, The New Generation, the NWA Show. I mean,
we do have a Power of the Pen booked for June.
The Power of the Penis.
David Penzer, former WCW ring announcer, will be our next guest on Power of the Pen.
Sweet.
That'll be in June.
What's his book about?
It's called Sitting Ringside. It's his stories of
Ringside?
Being a ring announcer for WCW.
That's pretty badass.
Looking forward to it. It's written by him and Guy Evans, who wrote the Nitro book.
Looking forward to seeing that show.
Yeah. Once we get to June, my life's back to normal. Yeah.
What is like June the magic time that life returns to normal?
Jamie will be done with the treatment, so yes.
Awesome.
Which, if you're listening or watching this, when this drops on Tuesday, she would have just left for Chicago today as this drops. So, and ironically enough, when the next show drops, which is Beware of Dog, is how we're going to end the month, she will be returning home.
Awesome.
So this week's going to be rough, but after that, we're done.
And we all look forward to that.
Yeah. It's been rough. It's been a hard, I mean, when did I tell you guys? November about this? Mm-hmm. Been a rough few months. My mom's coming up to help out this week. My sister-in-law is stepping up. My father-in-law is stepping up. And because their whole goal was for my week to not be affected, to help me just kind of keep a normal week, which is important for stuff like this. So I'll be able to get through the whole week with maybe only using a vacation day or two, which is nice.
Well, your work has been living hell the last couple work of weeks. Has not helped.
Actually, the last 10 days have been nice. It's been quiet, but the 2 weeks before that,
we get a text daily from DJ going, I don't know, the whole plan's down. I can't record.
It's May has sucked ass so far for TJ, but we're almost out of it. So
June, everything returns to normal.
Yeah. Is this true? Do we have a Sweet Life lined up for Labor Day weekend? I think I heard that.
Yeah, Justin's working it.
Yeah, so there's a Sweet Life coming. Not Cleveland.
Thank God.
Cleveland sucks. Shouldn't say that too loud. I will be in Cleveland for SummerSlam.
It still sucks.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just don't want people to come after me while I'm there.
It's going to suck less that you're there, though.
Thank you.
Cleveland rocks when TJ's there.
I still doubt it rocks. I bet it still sucks.
Anything else we need to discuss before we head off to our time machine? You know, I kind of miss talking about current events because there's been so much shit happening in wrestling the last few weeks, but I also understand why we don't.
I mean,
we have another platform for that.
Yeah.
I really want to get together and talk about Scottie Scheffler.
Mm. Right?
That was the
greatest news story ever.
Louisville police showing their best hospitality.
Gotta love it. How often do you think this is happening, and why is Scottie Shepherd the first person I'm hearing about?
I can't believe he drug a police officer with his car. Actually, I can't believe the cop jumped onto his car. It was like, hey, I can stop this car with my body.
I'd have been pissed too.
Like the fact that golf's been going on for this long and Scottie Shepherd's the first one to get. Well, it would have just been a Dewey had he not drove off, but
he wasn't drunk. He was on his way to the course.
It was maybe that morning. Drunk.
Yeah. He wasn't drunk at all.
Maybe he should have been.
RG3 said this was the biggest story in golf history. And then someone reminded him that Tiger Woods was all hopped up on Ambien and his wife beat the shit out of him with a golf club after scrolling through his cell phone and realizing he had whores all over the country.
Yes.
And then he decided to get in the car and then wrecked into a tree stump.
Yes.
That's
all story. Like within an hour.
Yeah. But he didn't drag a cop.
No.
Cop shouldn't have been standing there.
Just his reputation.
I love when the police department was describing the injuries. He had contusions on his leg and his pants were ruined.
His pants were ruined. That's not an injury.
That's destruction of government property.
That is that, but it is not an injury. You got your finger on the button there, Tim? Ooh. You ready?
Of course. I'm always this ready. Week,
we're going back to May 15th, 1993. We're going to watch some WWF Superstars. So before we get to that show, let's see what was happening in your world yesterday. Let's run through some events filter-free. Up first, Timmy. This is a good month. May of 93.
I was 22.
Stories that missed the cut. May 1st, the hero with Jerry Bailey on the ride wins Bailey's first derby. The other being in 96. Ironically enough, we will cover next.
Grindstone. You got to keep your nose to that horse.
Mm-hmm. Gross. May 8th, 16-year-old Karen Thomas dresses up as a train engineer and then takes a New York subway train and its passengers on a three-hour ride.
That would have been so awesome to remember.
What a Karen.
If the sad part is had this ended tragically, this would have been a story in the wheelhouse, but it didn't. So,
well, I mean, it's a train. Not a whole lot of things you can, you know.
I wonder what kind of a jail sentence he got.
Have you seen Speed? You can do a lot of shit on a train.
Yeah, but I doubt he had a bomb with him.
Wait, that was a bus.
I think the bomb played into that.
No, they didn't. They were on a train at the end of that. That's right. He jumped it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing that can happen.
Hey,
Lennox Lewis beats Tony Tucker in 12 rounds to win the heavyweight boxing title. I don't know which one.
Well, there's 42 of them, so.
Yeah, there's another one later, and it doesn't specify that one either. May 9th, a landslide in Nambija, Ecuador kills 300 people.
Shouldn't have been sliding there.
Hard to argue that one. May 10th, legendary hippie Bill Walton is inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Big deadhead.
Guy's annoying as shit as an announcer.
I love him as an announcer. Throw it down, big man. May 11th, over at the 28th Academy of Country Music Awards, see Garth Brooks and Vince Gill as the big winners.
Garth Brooks.
May 14th, William Randolph Hearst, newspaper magnate and 1955 Pulitzer winner, dies at the age of 85.
Yeah, he was good at newspaper.
He was.
You've never heard of William Randolph Hearst? Is that Hunter Hearst Helmsley's cousin?
Sure. Yes. We'll run with it. Yeah. May 15th, the Alamo Dome in San Antonio officially opens.
And 4 years later, they're struggling to get tenants. That's weird.
That's because the Spurs suck.
Well, but they also used it for
Royal Rumble 97.
But they said they got such a cheap deal because no one would rent it out.
And they got help, advertising help from Taco Bell. May 15th, Jane Seymour of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman fame marries James Keach. They'd be married for 22 years.
She was hot back in the day.
Is she still?
Probably, but she's like 90.
You mean like the 1800s when she was a medicine woman?
Yeah, I would give her my thermometer.
When she was in Wedding Crashers? Big deal. So some hot old woman made you fill up her cans. May 20th. The 274th and final episode of Cheers airs on NBC.
How did this miss the cut?
Because we've talked about it in length before.
I know. We should do it again.
We're
doing whatever Bow Wow Dog thing next week.
The word dog, yes.
Yeah.
But if
you Bow Wow Dog thing.
Me and Dave actually watched Cheers because of that episode.
I know. Yeah.
I almost finished it.
Kicks ass.
I got to Kirstie Alley season. Then I kind of grew bored of it.
By the way, if you've listened to this show since the beginning, for one, thank you. And second, the second episode we ever did is Beware of Dog. We will be doing that one again next week with all new stories. So how's that?
Naked Gun.
Dead weight dropped.
Huh?
What?
Yeah, there's that. And also we did like 11 stories in that show. I don't know what we were doing back then.
We didn't either.
We didn't either. It was the second episode.
It was not good.
Remember, we were like, we should probably trim this down. We got like 9 hours of podcast.
May 22nd, Riddick Bowe scores a TKO on Jesse Ferguson for a different heavyweight boxing title.
They would eventually merge them.
Yes, they would.
And then they would.
You know how long one of our shows would have been in the early days if we'd have did a Royal Rumble? Because TJ would like break down the matches. And then Hulk Hogan hit him with a big boot. Ultimate Warrior was thrown over the top rope by the Giant Gonzalez.
Remember, I used
Hulk Hogan
read,
went off the left rope.
I used to read drop. The order that they came out in.
Yes. Tim and I used to fall asleep.
then we were like, well, I'll do 10, then Timmy will do 10, and then Dave will do the last 10. That way we all have to pay attention.
And then we were like, hey, maybe Royal Rumble not the best format to do for this
maybe
show.
You don't do that one anymore. May 24th, the Canadiens beat the Islanders in 5 games ahead of the Stanley Cup.
No one cares.
Ice soccer.
They misspelled Canadians.
It's their country, idiots.
May 26th, Susan Lucci fails to win a daytime Emmy for the 14th time. We've actually covered that in detail before.
She eventually will win one.
It was like 2008.
Yeah.
She finally got one.
Yeah. She was in the 80s.
May 26th, Jose Canseco, the Texas Rangers, tries to field a ball in the outfield only to have it bounce off his head and over the wall for a home run for Carlos Martinez.
That's one of the greatest videos ever.
It's fantastic.
What an idiot.
What an idiot. May 27th, Dale Murphy, the Atlanta Braves, retires to 398 career home runs, not in the Hall of Fame.
You know why?
Hmm.
Compiler.
I don't know if that's correct. Actually, judging by your past history of calling people, I'm going to say it's not.
He's funny looking, too. That could be, the guy could be keeping him out.
Yeah, the guy who thinks Tim Duncan's overrated.
Definitely overrated.
No. May 29th, the LA Kings beat the Maple Leafs in 7 games to punch their ticket to the Stanley Cup final. This was the Gretzky Kings.
Who won?
I think the Kings did.
Better question. Who cares?
Because the Canadians have not won a Stanley Cup since like the 60s.
Because they can't spell their name.
Yeah, it's because they spelled Canadians wrong.
I don't know if that's right. May 29th. Canseco's at it again as he pitches the eighth at pitches. He pitches the eighth inning against the Red Sox. He gave up three runs on 2 hits, 2 walks, and hurt himself.
Well, they figured he couldn't give up a home run off his head if he was at the pitcher's mouth.
Although it'd be really cool if he did.
Right? If he got struck with a 112 mile an hour rocket.
Yeah, and his head
Canseco just rolled out of bed that season and been like, hey, how can I make this a big clown show? I'll let one bounce off my head and then I'll pitch an inning and hurt myself.
I mean, he played for the Rangers in 93. It wasn't hard.
Yeah, he was the Rangers then.
I mean, they had Nolan Ryan, and that's it.
And again, Canseco coming out of the bullpen.
May 30th.
That's the problem. He should have been a starting pitcher. He wasn't ready.
There you go. He hadn't warmed up yet. Emerson Fittipaldi beats out reigning F1 champion Nigel Mansell to win the Indy 500.
No one cares.
And that great segment just now. Let's do stories in the wheelhouse. May 13th. One of the greatest corner infielders to ever play the game and the subject of one of the craziest moments in baseball history, George Brett of the Kansas City Royals hits his 300th home run. The Kansas City Royals don't often get talked about as one of the storied franchises in baseball. They do have a rather underrated history. The team began play in the 1969 season along with the Seattle Pilots. The Royals have won 2 World Series in that 55-year history, winning in 85 and 2015, as well as 4 AL pennants. I cannot name you one player off the 2015 Royals. Eric Hosmer. That's it.
They had one of our pitchers.
Alex Ward. I guess
I don't know. Who cares? It's Kansas City.
That's true.
Steve Perry.
Kansas City may be the only city that sucks worse than Cleveland.
I don't know. I kind of like Kansas City. Brett is one of only 3 retired numbers for Kansas City, not counting Jackie Robinson. The other 2 are the number 10 of Dick Houser, who we've covered.
Florida State Seminole legend.
That's right.
I knew her back in college.
As he had an untimely passing due to brain cancer, and the number 20 of Frank White. I have no idea who that is. Brett debuted for the Royals in 1973 and would spend all of his 20 seasons with the Royals. The 1993 season was Brett's final, having already achieved the 3,000 hit mark in 92, although this moment has some levity to it. As Brett was celebrating his hit, California Angels first baseman Gary Gaetti picked Brett off when he stepped off the bag. What a dick. The next season, Brett's final hit was a single up the middle off of Rangers closing Tom Hankey. Shortly after, Brett scored his final run on a two-run home run by now teammate.
Tomb run? He's dead.
2-run home run by now teammate Gary Gaetti.
Badass.
Brett finished his final season batting .266 with 19 home runs and 75 driven in. Pretty solid last season. For his career, Brett hit .305, including a career high .390 in 1980. Brett was a 13-time All-Star, 1980 MVP, 85 ALCS MVP, 85 World Series winner, 85 Gold Glove winner, and 3-time AL batting champion, which occurred in 76, 80, and 90.
Brett's 3,154 career hits are the second most by a third baseman in Major League history, as he was surpassed by Adrian Beltre and is good enough for 18th most among all players.
No one's going to pass that anytime soon.
Third most hits by a third baseman.
Who's the other one?
Pete Rose often played third base.
He's a second baseman, dickhead. Shut up.
He played everywhere because he was awesome.
Pete Rose sucks. At wrestling. Baseball historian Bill James regards Brett as the second best third baseman of all time, trailing only his contemporary, Philadelphia Phillies legend Mike Schmidt.
Compiler.
Shut up.
In 1999, Brett was ranked number 55 on the Sporting News' list of the 100 greatest baseball players and was nominated as a finalist for the Major League Baseball All-Century team.
Should have made it.
If you want to know how good Brett really was, he is only one of five players in Major League Baseball history to accumulate 3,000 hits, 300 home runs, and have a career 300 batting average. Five.
Who would be the other four? 3,000 hits, 300 home runs, 300 batting average.
Mike Zunino.
Is not.
Ozzie Smith.
One. Somehow Mike Zunino would find a way to hit less hits than home runs.
Mike Schmidt, probably on that list.
You think Mike? I don't think Mike Schmidt batted 300.
I don't think he had 3,000 hits either.
Mm-mm. Let's look this up.
I'm looking at.
Go ahead, Timmy, and I'll lay this on you for box score trivia.
On July 24th, 1983, in a game against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, Brett hit a two-run homer off Goose Gossage in the top of the ninth inning with two outs to put the Royals up 5-4. After the home run, Yankees manager Billy Martin was drunk and cited the umpires to a rule stating any foreign substance on a bat could extend no further than 18 inches from the knob. Are we still talking about a bat here? The pine tar far extended beyond to about 24 inches, leading home plate umpire Tim McClellan to signal Brett out in the end of the game as the Yankees win. An enraged Brett charged out of the dugout directly towards McClellan, forcing two umpires and Royals manager Dick Houser to physically restrain him. Amid much controversy, the game was resumed August 18, 1983, from the point of Brett's home run and ended with a Royals win. Literally the only thing this compiler is known for.
Except for, you know, winning one of five players with 3,000 hits of 300.
He played three decades.
So those players are Stan Musial, Willie Mays.
Musial.
Stan Musial, Willie Mays, Miguel Cabrera, and Hank Aaron.
It's a pretty solid list. I wouldn't have thought Hank Aaron batted 300 for his career.
Yeah, he was at the beginning of his career, he was not so much a home run hitter. He was more of a average hitter.
Miggy also, if Miggy would have finished his career at third base, he would have surpassed Brett in hits, but he went and played first. Cabrera,
definitely a compiler.
What a list to be on.
The only one in this era was Miguel Cabrera. Or in our current era.
And it's not going to happen again anytime soon. I don't see Luis Ayres hitting 300 home runs.
Played 5 years longer than he should have.
He can't hit one.
Evan Longoria.
Is he still playing?
Yeah. No. I'm sure he is somewhere. Mexican League.
Well, speaking of Mexican League.
That's the wrong dumbass.
Let's try that again.
But today, I'm the greatest of all time. Vernon and Wah! Vernon with a great left.
Here it is. Page. Pressure with three. Wentz is going to run the ball. Makes a guy miss. Comes down to hit. Over the second rafter. Off the floor. Nothing. Through the window. Off the wall. Nothing but net.
You like that? You like that? I like that.
You gotta like that, right?
Timmy's right. Cheating. I saw him looking at his phone.
It was my iPad.
As we head into week three of May, our score is Dave 2, Timmy 1. That's the score.
1969, baby.
Here we go. I'm going to give you guys the opportunity for a bonus point because I don't know how often this is going to happen. John Olerud led the league in an offensive category we do not cover generally. Do you know which one it is?
Hit by pitch.
Nope.
Batting helmets worn while playing the field.
Not an offensive category.
It's offensive.
It's not offensive.
intentional walks.
On base percentage, he led the league at 393, I think it was. 473, excuse me.
I was going to say, Joey Votto territory right there.
2-1, Timmy, you are down. You need some points. Batting average leaders, 1993. How many can you name?
Three.
Dave, can you go four?
Four.
Timmy, can you go five?
Go four.
Okay, let's do four.
Tony Gwynn.
Third, 358.
John Olerud.
Second, 363. That was kind of cheating.
Barry Bonds.
Fifth, 336.
Roberto Alomar.
Seventh, 326. Timmy, you need five.
Dick Pilhawk and Frank Thomas.
No. Here's the rest of your top 10. In 10th, Carlos Baerga, 321.
Never.
Ninth, Chicago Cubs legend Mark Grace, 325. Eighth, Kenny Lofton, 325. Sixth, Paul Molitor, 332. You guess him every time, and you didn't guess him this time.
I thought he was retired.
Fifth, or fourth is Greg Jeffries of the St. Louis Cardinals, 342. And your league leader of the Colorado Rockies at 370, Andrés Galarraga, the big cat.
Fat ass Andrés Galarraga.
Wasn't that like their debut season, 93?
It was. Them and the Marlins, yes. They had a pretty formidable lineup. They had them, well, this was like 95, but you had Galarraga, Dante Bichette, Larry Walker, Vinny Castillo.
Larry Walker was it, yeah.
Ellis Burks. Like, they had a pretty good team. So Dave gets the point there. Dave, home run leaders, 1993. How many you got?
Four.
Dave says four. Timmy, can you do five?
I think I can do five.
Timmy says five. Dave, can you do six?
Fuck it, six.
Oh! Timmy, can you do seven?
I cannot do seven.
All right, Dave, six, go.
All right, Barry Bonds.
Led the league. He was tied for the league lead with 46.
Frank Thomas.
Fourth, 41.
Ken Griffey.
Third, 45.
Albert Bell.
Tied for six, 38.
How many do I have to get?
You got two more.
Shit. Fred McGriff. Crime Dog.
Tied for eight, 37.
Fuck, Dave Justice?
Fifth, 40. Timmy, you can't win this category.
Cheating. He's cheating.
No way. I just named all the big time home run hitters.
No way he guesses Dave Justice. Fuck off.
Dave Justice was my favorite ball player back then, idiot face. I tell you what, Timmy, if you can get two of the remaining four, I will give you a bonus point.
What? This is crap. Let's see. God, he named all of them.
Except for four.
Joe Carter.
No. Here's the rest of your top 10. In 10th, the Atlanta Braves, Ron Gant, 36.
Ron Gant?
Ron Gant.
How many did he hit? 36. That dude was built like a brick shithouse.
He was.
But you don't ever think of him as a top 10 home run guy.
Cincinnati Reds legend, Ron Gant.
He was a walking pec muscle. That's what Ron Gant was. In 8th, tied with McGriff, Rafael Palmeiro.
Ah, shit. Steroid.
In 6th, tied with Albert Bell, Matt Williams, 38 of the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, Giants, yeah.
4th.
Oh, I just thought of another one.
Dick Pilhop and Frank Thomas finished 4th with 41.
He said Frank Thomas.
Did he?
Juan Gon.
Tied for 1st, Juan Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers, 46. I gave Timmy a chance, and he couldn't even do that. Timmy, you're back up. Win leaders, 1993. There's some doozies on this one. There's some solid names. Or I'll give you the choice. Do you want to do wins or do you want to do ERA?
Wins.
Because either way, we're going to do ERA.
I need the points, so let's do wins.
Wins. How many can you name?
Four.
Dave, can you do five?
Mm-mm.
Timmy, go four.
Jose Rijo.
Nope. Dave, you need one and you win the category. Are you shitting?
Greg Maddux.
Greg Maddux, fifth, 20. How hard was that? Here's the rest.
I still think Jose Rios should be on that list.
Well, he's not. Here's the rest of your top 10. All tied for eighth, Kevin Apier, Alex Fernandez, Jimmy Key, Steve Avery, and Mark Portugal. All had 18.
Was Tom Glavine on there too?
Tom Glavine was on there. Tied for sixth,
Pat Hankin. You have three Atlanta Braves on there.
You ready for this? Pat Hankin and Randy the Fuck Johnson tied for sixth.
Randy the Fuck Johnson.
Fourth, Bill Swift. All tied for the league lead with 22. Blackjack McDowell, John Burkett, and Tom Glavine. All had 22.
Oh.
And you said Black Jose Jack Rios. My God.
Who was the World Series? Was it Toronto and Chicago?
93 would have been Toronto, Philly.
It was not Chicago. Like, Chicago's never in the World Series.
The White Sox.
Toronto, Philly. That was the ALCS.
Two AL teams. No,
they were in the championship. They were in
the
AL championship.
Was that Albert Bell and Frank Thomas on the same team then?
No. Bell didn't go to the White Sox like 98.
Yeah, no. Albert Bell was still with Cleveland then.
Bo Jackson?
Bo Jackson had a dead
may
leg.
Have been in the White Sox in 93.
His leg was dead.
Is he in them or Kansas City?
His leg was dead thanks to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Dave, it's 5-1. You have ERA.
3-4.
Timmy says it can do 4. I don't believe this at all. Dave, can you do 5?
Go ahead, Timmy.
Here we go.
Greg Maddux.
Led the league 2.36.
Because no one could hit anything he ever threw. Tom Hinkie.
Was a closer. Dave.
He still has an ERA?
Closers don't count in the ERA counting.
Yes, they do.
So how many do I need? Two. Steve Avery.
6, 2.94.
Jose Rio.
2nd, 2.48.
How trash was the Reds offense in 93? He was 2nd in the league in ERA.
But nowhere to be found in wins.
I want to know why closers aren't – they can win the ERA title.
Because no, they can't. You have to have two – I think it's 200 innings pitched to win the ERA title.
That's bullshit.
I don't make the rules.
You should have said starter ERA.
It's 6-1. Here's the rest of your top 10. Tom Candiotti of the LA Dodgers, 3.12. Jimmy Key, Pete Harnisch, Wilson Alvarez, Bill Swift, Mark Portugal, Kevin Apier, and you got the top two, Maddux and Rio.
And how the hell is Jose Rio 2nd ERA and not top 10 in wins?
Because the Reds were shit. Let's look this up. Cincinnati Reds, 1993.
I bet Reds. That was a hell of a lineup.
I'm willing to bet this was Chris Sabo's comeback year.
Well, you know Larkin was there.
They went 73-89.
That's a banner.
Finished
year for
fifth
them.
In the NL West.
Let's see. Your infielders, Jeff Branson, Willie Green, Keith Gessinger. It's not good.
That's not a good team.
When you have two guys in your infield that have 62 and 60 as their jersey numbers. Brian Colling, Barry Larkin, Randy Milligan, Hal Morris, Bip Roberts, Chris Sabo.
Boom. Hey, Hal Morris was a beast, man.
And Juan Samuel, your outfielders, Jacob Brunfield, Tim Costo.
I don't know who you said is. Costco.
I also thought I said
that's Costco. Where they picked him up at was Costco.
Jack Doherty, Cecil Espy. Espy, that's who they named the award after.
I don't recognize any of those names.
Tommy Gregg, Cesar Hernandez, Thomas Howard, Keith Hughes, Roberto Kelly, Kevin Mitchell, Reggie Sanders, Greg Tubbs, and Gary Varsho. Do you want me to keep going into pitchers? Because this is bad.
Keep it's going. This is like a walk down memory lane. I love
it. It's a miracle you guys won 73 games.
Wait, Kevin Mitchell. Man,
you should have won 39.
Catch a baseball barehanded.
Ugh.
Can he do it with an eye patch?
I don't know.
He didn't play for the Pirates. We get one more drink and we'll start the next story. This one's fun. May 16th, Mr. Beef Injection himself, Judd Nelson, pleads no contest after kicking Kim Evans in the back of the head. This story comes to us by she was also talking shit, as we'll find out. This story comes to us by the Deseret News out of Dallas. By 1993, Judd Nelson was one of the biggest bona fide Hollywood stars after starring in The Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. That was just 85 and New Jack City in 91. Unfortunately for him, after this assault case, his career would drop off drastically. The case states that Nelson was at a Dallas bar on May 16, 1992, with fellow actress and girlfriend Shannon Doherty. While the two were sitting at the patio, a table of three women began taunting Nelson, saying that his career was in a slump. I would like to see their careers for this for a comparison. Now what happened next is iffy because there's only two published accounts and they're drastically different. One account states that Nelson was trying to leap over a railing to confront the women, only to get his foot tangled in a chair, causing the leg of the chair to hit Evans in the back of the head. The other account, which is from the bar security, states that he kicked Evans in the back of the face, karate style, which is my favorite story.
I would pay good money to see this.
I would
think,
too.
Do you think he went, hi-ya?
Yeah, absolutely.
The chair one, with his foot getting caught up in a chair and then him smash her in the head with a chair. That would be
He was like, Ralph Macchio taught me this one.
Yeah, I don't know which one I want to see more. Him falling and busting her with the chair or him karate manning her.
Either way, he's a raging dumbass and hit this woman in the back of the head with a chair because he got tangled in it. Or he just hauled off and Cobra Kider right in the middle of this restaurant. Nelson would ultimately serve 2 years of probation, then he had the charge expunged from his record, which, as anyone knows, that's not a thing. Evans stated that she was unhappy with the judge's ruling. Well, no shit.
The Breakfast Club, huh?
Yep.
Never seen it.
You should. It's funny.
Nelson is probably most famously known for his voice. In 1986, he voiced Hot Rod in the animated Transformers the movie.
I literally did not know that.
Hot Rod first appeared in the American animated series during the events of the Transformers the movie, where he was one of many Autobots stationed at Autobot City. He fought in the Autobot City battle and saved Autobot City if he had not attacked Megatron, Megatron and the Decepticons would have destroyed the city.
How did this turn into a movie synopsis?
Unfortunately, Hot Rod's intervention in the fight between Megatron and Optimus Prime backfired, and Megatron was able to kill Optimus Prime. Enter Rodimus Prime. Hot Rod was given the Matrix and became the new leader of the Autobots.
Roddy Piper, I knew it.
That is, until parents complained about their kids being distraught over the death of Optimus Prime, and he was ultimately revived and once again took over leadership of the Autobots.
I mean, to be fair, he was a machine. Yeah, like, repair him. What? Transformers, never seen it.
I haven't seen the 86 one.
But he was also in one of the greatest comedies of all time, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and he was the sheriff.
That movie's so great.
This was spawned from Kevin Smith's love of all the Brat Pack movies, particularly The Breakfast Club. See, Dave, not everyone hates great things.
I think we're going to do a Breakfast Club watch-along.
We should.
On the RAM Network.
We should. It's good. I watched it at Rush.
Dave will skip it.
I won't.
And then,
he goes,
and
I won't
brag
there.
About having not seen it.
You guys will start to watch along, and my internet will just go out.
Like, we should do it on RAM. I won't be there, but we should do it on RAM for sure.
Yeah, we should do this. I won't be there.
Here's another 93 May great entertainment stories. May 24th, famous actress, and with her portrayal of Catwoman and Batman, the subject of many people's fantasies in the 1990s. Kim Basinger files bankruptcy to avoid paying a $7.4 million.
Michelle Pfeiffer, you idiot.
Yeah. Not
Oh,
Catwoman.
Shit, it was.
She played Vicki Vale.
Was she even in Batman?
Yes, she played Vicki Vale.
Okay, good.
The first one.
At least I got the movie right.
Catwoman was in Batman Returns, dum-dum.
Yeah.
Not even in the first Batman.
How did I fuck up one sentence three times? In the same general topic. Now, these stories seemed boring.
Catwoman in Superman Returns.
Well, I mean, I danced around the right thing. I just never got there.
Correct superhero, at least.
This story seems boring on first glance, but I knew absolutely nothing about this, so I felt the need to dig in. Basinger's quite the film and television portfolio, but her personal life could also be a movie. She dated Joe Namath in the late 1970s. She had to have been like 18 here.
Didn't they all?
That's true. This was before she was famous also. In 1980, after appearing in the film Hard Country... Basinger was at a health food store and suffered a sudden onset of agoraphobia, which is the fear of being outside, and was housebound for 6 months.
What?
I think I have that now. I don't like being in public. I'm not necessarily afraid of it. I just don't like it.
I like being in public.
I don't know.
Just so I can stir up shit.
Well, I mean, I like to be around you in public to watch you stir up shit. But
like Ron White said, I didn't want to be in public. They threw me into public.
But just like every day moving around, like, no, I'm good. I don't need to go to the store. When she married makeup artist Ron Snyder, whom she had met during Hard Country, I bet she did, she told him to change his last name to Britton so she could keep her initials. What?
What?
Why wouldn't you just keep your last name?
Yeah.
Right?
Whore. I don't get it. They divorced just for the Christmas of 89. I can't imagine why that would be. Hey, will you marry me? Also, pussy, will you change your last name to Britton, which is also not my last name? Makes no sense.
I mean, Kim Basinger in 89, I'd have done a lot of things, though.
Here's this. Basinger then paid $9,000 a month for alimony. Yikes.
I don't know. It don't matter how hot she is. I'm not changing my name to Dave Bada Bing. Like, we're just going to leave it the way it is.
I wish you would change it to Dave Bada Bing.
That's tremendous. After this, she dated Prince after the filming of Batman, only to marry Alec Baldwin of Eric Barron a few months later here in 93. Marrying
Eric Barron.
These two divorced in 02, and in Baldwin's 2008 book, A Promise to Ourselves, A Journey Through Fatherhood and Divorce, which is way too long of a name, Baldwin wrote about the contentious custody battle of their daughter, Ireland, and that Basinger spent over $1.5 million in court fees to get sole custody of Ireland, which while also barring him for parental access at all. She's a dick. I'm gonna
write a book. It's going to be Dave and the HSV.
I think...
A journey into podcasting, yes, with the Filter Free Podcast and running things on the RAM Network and doing other shows on the RAM Network for everybody to enjoy.
Like, I don't need to read the book now.
No.
This is like Alanis Morissette wrote the title to this book.
Isn't it ironic?
Mm. Here in 93, a movie was released called Boxing Helena. Basinger was set to star in the film, only to pull out at the last second. The studio would then win an $8.9 million judgment against her. She is a walking shit show, is the point of my story here.
And a whore.
Yeah, and she's a whore.
You think she's good in the sack?
Hard Country. That's my answer to that.
Where her vagina is now. It's Hard Country.
Basinger would file for bankruptcy to avoid payment. A higher court ruled in her favor on appeal, and she settled with the studio for a lesser sum of $3.9 million.
I'm still laughing at TJ thinking Kim Basinger was Catwoman.
Yeah.
In Tim Burton's 1989 film Batman, Basinger took on the role of photojournalist Vicki Vale opposite Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. Basinger rewrote the film's third act with producer John Peters, with whom she was having a behind-the-scenes affair with.
What? That's bizarre.
He touched her.
That's not like her at all.
With his pee-pee.
The Hollywood Reporter in its original review remarked that the uniqueness and very soul of the film is achieved through the beautifully defined and probing performances of Michael Keaton as Bruce Wayne and Kim Basinger as Vicki Vale.
Time out.
I thought she was absolutely pointless in this movie.
She was terrible.
I just said, when anyone thinks of the original Batman movie, does anyone think, and do y'all remember Vicki Vale? Am I right? No. It's
Jack Keaton Nicholson.
And Jack Nicholson. That's it.
Yeah.
I literally forgot she was
in. You thought movie. She was Catwoman.
I thought she was Catwoman.
So let's run this down. Joe Namath, that hairdresser dude that wouldn't change his name, Prince, Alec Baldwin. But the best one is after her divorce from Baldwin, Basinger was reported to be romantically linked with 8 Mile co-star Eminem. Dude, she played his mom in that movie.
It was also disproven later.
How you know?
Eminem said was like, no, I'm not.
Hot Rocks Cafe. That's where they went on their date.
We still need to go there, but everyone knows what happens in the Hot Rocks stays in the Hot Rocks. Everyone knows that.
Correct. Does that mean it's my turn?
If I can find it, yeah.
That means it's my turn. Let's go to Timmy's Trivia Key.
Figaro.
That's not Tosca.
Ugh, my ears.
My neck, my back.
Yep, I remember. Everyone remembers when Elvis performed that.
Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take care of you. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama, Ilana, Montego Bay. Do you guys realize looking at that video, like, my background is the only one that hasn't taken a drastic change since we started doing the show?
I changed corners. That's really changing.
Well, I changed states.
They've changed states. He's in a completely different room now.
True.
All right. Let's do some trivia-key. Song number one, clue number one. This is
after
a song
my
by
clean sweep last week.
My dog loves this segment. This is a song by American rock group Four Non Blondes, released March 1993 by.
What's up?
What's going on?
Dave gets it. And sometimes when I'm by your bed, just to get it all out, what's in my head. I'm feeling
a little peculiar.
And so I went in the morning and I cried. I deep breath and I got in the and I said, how many cats had to be murdered in that song to get those voices?
12. You mean just 12. Now or in the
original? Well, no, her singing it. You act like she was singing it so much better than we were.
Are you disparaging the name of the Cranberries in front
That's
of us
not
right
the
now?
Cranberry Catwoman.
Four Non Blondes.
Four Non Blondes. That's what I said.
Four Non Blondes played Catwoman in Batman.
I'm on fire on this show.
Song number two, clue number one. This is a song by American rock band Bon Jovi, first appearing on their fifth studio album, Keep the Faith.
Keep the Faith.
I would have said by the same
song name. From the Fish and Crab Show.
The Fish and Crab Show.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Clue number two.
Deadliest Catch.
What?
Shit.
Clue number two. John Bon Jovi wrote the song in a hotel room while suffering from a hangover, and the lyrics reflect his feelings at the time.
Bitches be tripping.
I don't think that's Bon Jovi.
I don't like the song.
Clue number three, this became a staple on Bon Jovi's set list for years to come and was featured on the band's Crossroad Greatest Hits album in an acoustic
it's my
style.
Life.
I'm laying down in a bed of roses. Really? No?
Uh-uh.
No?
Got nothing here.
Oh, come on!
I heard
93
it.
Bon Jovi was trash.
What?
Oh, the song I was thinking of.
I want it, dead or alive. Cowboy. That was off Slippery When Wet.
See, what, once you get past like 89 Bon Jovi, you're playing Danger's territory for this game. No one knows it.
My God. He only had one hit after that, and it was It's My Life in like 2001.
Yeah.
Doom, doom. Doom, 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 doom. Doom, doom.
Dave is a really good bass drum.
He is a good.
All right, song number three, clue number one. This is a folk rock song by American singer-songwriter Harry Chapin from his fourth
Saturday Night Fever
studio album, Verities and Balderdash. Clue number two, in 1992, American hard rock band Ugly Kid Joe included a cover of the song.
Cotton Eye Joe.
What?
Ugly Kid Joe.
Where did you come from, Ugly Kid Joe? Where did you come from, That's Ugly Kid Joe?
Clue number three. This peaked at number six on U.S. Billboard Hot 100, giving Ugly Kid Joe their highest charting single and ranking.
Got this in the cradle and the silver spoon. Literally. Your music taste sucks.
You all hate good music.
No, this you hate trash. Music. If you pick a song...
Who put a cat in a cradle? That thing will jump
Harry Chapin did.
If there's three people in a room and you pick a song and you know the words and the other two do not, percentages are against you, okay?
Yes. You no. suck.
No.
Hit my clip.
Oh, it's time for Dave's Fave. Have you seen it?
You slipper the hot beef injection.
We're men in tights, tights, tights. All in. All for tires, maybe that kind of thing before me.
TJ leads four.
I got pen and paper.
Where's the pen and paper, TJ? Here we go. Five movies this week.
I'm in.
93 was Epico. Here we go. With a budget of $28 million. Our first movie this week grossed more than $92 million at the box office. This is an American political comedy film. An uncanny presidential lookalike is recruited by the Secret Service to become a momentary stand-in for the President of the United States after he suffers a stroke while having an affair on his wife. Mm. This film stars Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver.
I can't remember the name of it.
Here's a hint.
Ah, no hint.
No hints then.
That's okay.
Think of my name.
I'll own this one. I don't remember it.
Dave. That's right.
This is fucking name of the movie's Dave.
Okay. Yes.
Dave. Fucking name of the movie is Dave.
Because Kevin Kline's name was Dave.
Mm, original. Way to think outside the box.
Based on a true story. From when George
Washington. It's not based on a true story.
It's based on a true story. George H.W. Bush actually was based on.
All right. Movie number B with a budget of $25 million. Our second movie this week grossed more than $133.8 million at the box office. This is an American parody film. This is one of Dave's faves. In this Rambo parody, Topper Harley leads a rescue team into Iraq to save Iraqi war prisoners and all of their previous rescue teams. This film stars Charlie Sheen and Lloyd Bridges. TJ Stephens.
Hot Shots Part Deux.
There you go, TMEC.
Hot Shots Part Deux.
Got him. Both. Here we go. This one's going to get tough. With a budget of $14 million. Movie number C grossed more than $40.7 million at the box office. This is an American family buddy cop comedy film. This film's one of Dave's faves. Seen it in the theater three times.
Wow.
Jesus.
Well, you have to remember where I lived, there was only a theater with four screens.
In 93, this would have cost you like $74.
After witnessing a murder, a young boy named Devin refuses to testify unless he is given the chance to become a policeman. This movie was filmed on location in the greatest city in America, Tampa,
Cincinnati.
It stars Florida State Seminole legend Burt Reynolds, and there is Florida State memorabilia all over this movie. Timmy C.
Cop and a half?
Timmy C. Cop and a half!
Yeah. That movie only made $40 million because Dave went to see it 400 times.
Yeah.
No one else saw that movie.
Love that movie. I watched it with my kids a month ago. Because they came out with a second one called Cop and a Half New Recruit.
Oh my God. They made a sequel.
Was Burt Reynolds also in that one?
No, he's dead.
He's not dead.
He's not dead.
Burt Reynolds is dead.
No.
Wouldn't he go on the movie? Biggie? Burt Reynolds died a couple years ago.
When did the movie come out, is what I'm asking.
Like 2019, I think.
Well, it says was. So, yeah, he died 6 years ago.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Died in 2018.
Yeah, that's...
Cop and a Half New Recruit came out in 2017.
He could have been in it.
Lou Diamond Phillips is the main character.
Wow.
That was a good one.
Lou Diamond Phillips from
La Bamba.
And nothing else.
A Cop and a Half New Recruit.
Mm.
His career's making a comeback.
Sure it is.
6 years ago, it was.
Movie number R. With a budget of $48 million. Our fourth movie this week grossed $38.9 million at the box office.
Not great.
This is an American fantasy adventure film. Two Brooklyn plumbers must travel to another dimension to rescue a princess from an evil dictator and stop him from taking over the world. Stars Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo.
Bob Hoskins.
TJ Stevens.
Super Mario Brothers.
Timmy C.
Super Mario Brothers.
Both. Look at this go.
Oh, hey, I mean. I'm going to go pick up
my. There you go. Ooh-wee. Look at those abs.
I got an ab.
By the way, speaking of abs, we have something to plug at the end of the show. Well, I was wearing the shirt, so I wouldn't forget.
Yep. All right. Last movie of the week. It is now, Tim, 1-2-4-2. Timmy is leading 7-6.
Okay. I'll let him have it for right now. We got another show to go.
With an unknown budget.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
Movie number Q this week.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Grossed just over $17 million at the box office.
Oh my God.
Could be good, could be terrible. I don't know.
Dave saw it four times.
This is an American action comedy.
Comedy.
This is an American action comedy drama film. A bullied teen who fantasizes about being Chuck Norris's partner trains in martial arts at the local Chinese restaurant, The Frying Dragon, to fulfill his dreams. This film stars Jonathan Brandis, Chuck Norris, and Joe Piscopo.
It is a Karate Kid ripoff.
Not one of Dave's faves. This movie sucks balls.
Nope.
Sidekicks. TJ.
Timmy should be ashamed. That's my answer to that. Timmy should be ashamed of himself.
That movie is awesome.
Sure it is.
That movie sucks.
Whatever.
Timmy now leads 8-6.
I mean, it was no Ladybugs. That was probably Jonathan Brandis's peak. But
sure, I'll give him a 96. It's fine.
What a great... Those were great movies.
Those were all good movies. They weren't all good movies.
Super Mario Brothers was trash. Sidekicks sucked. Hot Shots Part 2 is awesome.
I could have swore Super Mario Brothers came out way before 93.
You were thinking of the television show with Lou
Albano. You're right. I was. Even still, like,
Albano was Super Mario Brother?
Because they had John Leguizamo.
Lou Albano was Mario.
He was. You know where he was, Lil Bannon was not on? WWF Superstars from May 15th, 1993. Drugs. He was on drugs. Your announcers are Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and Macho Man Randy Savage. We start the show with Giant Gonzalez looking at his teeth or snarling or something. I'm not sure. Harvey Whippleman's in the background saying that tonight the superhuman Giant Gonzalez will end his undefeated streak. Then we go to the announce position, which is a green screen, and we're joined by Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and Randy Savage.
The Giant Gonzalez, yes! Yes, I'm excited for this.
It is literally the reason why I picked this episode. He was in the preview.
Oh, look, it's Dave's favorite wrestler, Tatanka. Yay.
Tonka.
Text a type.
He's a trip.
What is the Macho Man wearing here? What kind of hat?
His 93 Macho Man gear?
It's like a baseball cap, though. It's not his like cowboy hat. He was wearing like a bedazzled baseball cap.
Well, that's what I'm wearing on the boat today.
And I think Jerry Lawler was the king of Zamunda here, the way he was dressed. What in the hell?
So it happens when you film in front of a green screen. You kind of get lax with your wardrobe. Match one, the Steiner brothers take on Mark Ming and Jim Armstrong. The fuck?
So it's three on two?
The fuck kind of a wrestling nickname is Mark Ming?
Oh, I thought Ming was a tag team partner.
No, his name is Mark Ming. That's all one person.
Oh. Man, he's got a good legal argument over Haku.
It's spelled differently.
Oh.
Scott suplexes old Mark Ming on his head and then even helps him tag out by dragging his lifeless corpse to the corner. Rick then takes in and suplexes Jim Armstrong on his head.
Yeah, they did.
The Steiners hit the top of Bulldog for the win.
The Steiners wrestled like absolute heels when they were facing jobbers.
Absolutely.
I had to look up old Mark Ming. Nothing on this guy. He was jacked, though.
He was pretty jacked. Than most jobbers.
But him and old Jimmy Armstrong just got obliterated and almost killed. So
I think they did get killed. I'm pretty sure one of them died from injuries.
Rest in peace, Ming Armstrong.
Ming Armstrong.
Well, I saw it and said I doubt it lasts more than 2 minutes. I didn't realize they were going to beat the dog shit out of him. It's the original Ming. Mark Ming. And yeah, pretty sure Scott Steiner killed that guy. And then Rick kills the other guy. They're like murdering them. Vince is correct when he says they don't care because they beat the fuck out of these jobbers.
They did.
And then I'm pretty sure that Scott was really trying to break the dude's arm. Like, this is bullshit. The Steiners were taking advantage. I hated this.
I felt so bad. It's one of those shows where you kind of watch and like, I'm kind of surprised this made air.
It's one where I watch it and go, you know what? That story about the Sharpies was probably true.
Because it's one of those shows like, man, if this match, you know, ever went to a lawsuit, like you just aired the evidence on national television.
Right.
it's a bold strategy for sure, but it's probably not going to work. But then again, as we know, this man not good at, you know, strategy.
Judgment. Yeah.
Now we're joined with a split screen and we see Jim Duggan and Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji, and the moderator is Gene Okerlund. We're reminded of when Yokozuna squashed Jim Duggan, put him out of action, draped his carcass with the American flag. We're setting up for a rematch as we head to the King of the Ring.
This is pretty much the end of Hacksaw in WWF here.
Yes.
He had a short feud with Shawn Michaels over the Intercontinental Championship, then did the house show loop with Yokozuna prior to SummerSlam 93, and that was it.
Hacksaw says that what happened to him is always on his mind. That must be a single lonely thought in that brain.
I just considered, because Duggan was lower down on the card here at 93, but the fans never really lost interest in Duggan. And Yoko was crazy over here by the going to the summer of 93. Imagine if they have their rematch, Duggan resigns so he doesn't leave for WCW, and Duggan actually gets the upset win over Yoko heading into the summer.
Well, I was confused by this because they're building to King of the Ring, but King of the Ring, it's Yoko and Hulk.
Because yeah, this match was never on television. This was a build up for house show.
Yeah, it was like the body slam on the Intrepid. It wasn't on television. Well, that might have been, but the rest of the show
was on it's on the network. We're gonna watch it on Eras, the New Generation, only on the RAM network.
It's gotta be for the 4th of July when you do it
again. So June. June, I'm back, so save that shit for them. Match two, Mew. Mr. Hughes. takes on Bobby Young. McMahon talks about how much we don't know about Mr. Hughes and then proceeds to give us his life resume. Reverend Slick goes picture in picture and tells Hughes that he can guide his energy into a positive light. This is when Reverend Slick turns baby face and he's managing Kamala. Then Hughes hits the chokeslam for the win.
Jerry Lawler even called out McMahon. He's like, we don't know much about Mr. Hughes, and then started talking all this stuff about Mr. Hughes. He goes, well, somebody doesn't know much about him. You sure do know a lot.
Kansas State University.
Did Mr. Hughes ever hang out in any wrestling organization for very long?
No.
It seemed like he was always bouncing over the place.
In ECW.
He was Big Cat in WCW.
Right.
Then became Mr. Hughes. I mean, other than wrestling in a shirt and tie with sunglasses, this dude never accomplished shit.
And I still don't know why he wrestled with sunglasses.
I don't know, but I'm willing to bet his bald head still has the line in it from the strap that he wore, because that son of a bitch was tight.
Rex Specs.
No, he's no Sabo. But Mr. Hughes was a terrible gimmick. I don't know why he drug it with him everywhere he went. It was a stupid-ass gimmick.
Remember when he came back with Jericho and he had a glittery shirt?
He came back with Triple H for a minute right before China.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then came back again with Jericho.
Again. Now we get a promo video with the theme music of the Smoking Guns.
That was terrible.
It was terrible.
All they needed was a Trans Am.
One of them is still around today.
Billy Gunn.
The other one's an electrician.
There's nothing wrong being an electrician. It's a solid career.
No, I'm saying that. The other one's an electrician.
TJ's his boss.
I'm not. I wish. Match three. I would
knock you out.
I'm in the union. I'm in no one's boss. Match three. Terry Zeller squares off with still super babyface Bob Backlund. Backlund is in here showing off the wrestling skills and hits some sort of a cradle for the win.
Bob Backlund goes crazy in the beginning, and Jerry Lawler says, slow down there, Bob. You'll blow out your pacemaker. Was there a bigger goober in wrestling than Bob Backlund when he returned to the WWF?
Not until he turned heel.
I hated
heel.
That guy.
When he turned heel, he was turned great, heel. Though.
He was atrocious until he went crazy and chicken winged that shithead Bret Hart.
Heel this Bob Backlund's sucked. Underrated.
Yeah. Underrated. Face Bob Backlund, horrible.
Horrible.
Face Bob Backlund was WWF champion for like a decade. So he was doing something right.
And it didn't get big till he was gone.
Well, it was great in 78.
Yeah.
Yeah, that goober shit worked back then.
Look, I just folks, I can't wait to just get in front of you, just give you all I've got 100% down to the mat. Just I can't. No rules broken. I'm going to follow all the rules, even though I know my opponent's going to break all of them. And I'm just going to give you all I got. Bob Backlund, Minnesota. Like,
that was the man that was so bad at promos, they made Arnold Skoland his manager, who was just as bad at promos.
Like, you're real good at the ring, but you're never going to talk again in this company.
I was just wondering, what is Bob Backlund doing here in 1993? Dude was like 50. He was like 50 here. Although he was still in better shape than most of the guys.
Absolutely.
And who's the goofy ass referee that used to have the whistle in ECW?
Bill Alfonso.
Bill Alfonso. Oh,
idiot face. And Bob Backlund had a hungry butt.
Also one of the OG jokes of the show, the hungry butt. Yeah, he did. Up next, we go to Bonnie Blackstone, who's standing in front of the ring, and here comes the narcissist Lex Luger. They should have never stopped this gimmick. It was perfect for Luger.
It was him. He didn't even have to play. Yeah.
We're in the middle of the loaded forearm angle for Luger, and Bonnie's just sitting here describing his forearm until she asks Luger if the fight gives him an unfair advantage. President Jack Tunney has recently ruled that Luger can't compete without protective gear on the forearm. Luger gets mad and gives a great promo here for Luger on how he's going to knock out everyone that gets in his way. This was good. I like this.
Who is Bonnie Blackstone? I don't remember this girl at all.
She did the promo for this.
Yeah, she reminds me of Marcy Darcy from Married with Children.
Country version.
I agree with TJ, though. I'd like to have seen some more from this narcissist gimmick. They moved on way too quickly and made him a face. Shit was terrible.
This gimmick had legs, and they
because Hogan left. They needed that baby face.
Like, hey, you have great pecs. When you want to be, you want to wear these American flag tights,
right?
Go on.
I like you guys. I hadn't seen Bonnie Blackstone before, but I remember Bruce used to talk about her quite a bit on the show. But I'm pretty sure she was only there for a cup of coffee. The Narcissist here brought to you by Reynolds Wrap, because he is covered in that shit. And I thought Luger had a lot of flair in this promo. Like, you could hear that the flair coming out.
Like, I don't want to sound like I'm joking, or this was probably, honestly, probably one of Luger's better promos.
Yeah.
It was here. It was good. He got legit pissed off. And they, again, they abandoned this character way too fast. This one had legs. Like, imagine Bret's first legit title feud in 93 is Bret Hart against the Narcissist Lex Luger. Could have been something.
Yeah.
Instead, we have Bret Hart, Hogan, and Yokozuna, which was the shits. Match four, speaking of the shits, Bert will take Jose Martinez.
Rest in peace.
I didn't watch
this Jose match. Martinez died?
No. Virgil.
Martinez?
Virgil Martinez, yes.
I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch this match super close. Virgil did some stuff, and then Jose did some stuff, and then Virgil hit the worst Russian leg sweep of all time and got the win.
I can't believe Virgil was still in WWF here. I thought he was gone after he got squashed by Yokozuna. Like,
he had like 2 years to go.
Holy shinoli. He sucked.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Correct. It was odd having Virgil versus the Jobber when it should actually just say Jobber versus Jobber. I mean, what the hell are we doing with Virgil here? And did Jerry Lawler make a joke about hanging?
I think he did.
Holy shit.
I think he did.
I think WWF missed the boat on a Virgil Mr. Hughes feud when you could have bodyguard versus bodyguard.
But he wasn't bodyguarding anyone here.
But he was at one point. He could have went back into the... He had two guys in suits fighting each other.
So sorry.
He one of them...
All right.
One of them sparkly.
My bad.
And you know how Virgil's not going to be in the main event? His finish is the side Russian leg sweep.
Yeah, we got a guy in AEW who made a venture. His finish is a clothesline.
Well, Stan Hansen's finisher was a clothesline, so...
No, his is a short arm like Jake Roberts used to set up the DDT with.
Hmm. Who's that?
Okada. Oh. The Rainmaker. It's dumb.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
You know what he's not? He's not the Moneymaker.
Correct. I don't know why I brought that up just now, but I did. Match five. The Intercontinental Champion Shawn Michaels goes one-on-one with Billy Jones. Michaels takes control early, as you suspect he would. It even takes some time out of the match to give Mike McGurk a kiss. Mike McGurk is a woman, for those of you who don't know. Pretty hot one, too. Sean hits Sweet Chin Music for the win.
Not here. He's old.
Michaels was really starting to hit his stride here to show what he could be a superstar.
True.
I was expecting Diesel with him, but I guess he just wasn't there yet, as he was signed in June. Diesel got there right before the King of the Ring.
King of the Ring, yep.
And I was, for some reason, I was just thinking, oh, where's Diesel? Nope. But Michaels dominated this jobber and just complete destruction. That was a good chin music, too.
That was. And I appreciate that he didn't set it up. He just did it.
Yep, that was a match.
Thank you. Now we have a King of the Ring report with Gene Okerlund, brought to you by Ica Pro. Hulk Hogan is face down in the sand, watching the sand go through Gene's hand and laughing like a shitty Batman villain. This King of the Ring is headlined by Hogan versus Yokozuna for the WWF title and ultimately the end of Hogan in the WWF until 02. Hogan then says that he's been on the brink of disaster, drinking his own sweat to survive. Why? What? Is there something in this I missed?
His television career was in the toilet at this point.
That's all I have. They won't give me water on set because we're filming garbage. Also, not how survival works. That's one of the things you learn in survival school. Don't do that. Now we go over the bracket with the only round that's filled is Razor versus Brett in round one, which is also incredibly dumb.
You know, I was a fan of this one night King of the Ring tournament. I'd rather see it as 8-man tournament in one night rather than this shit that gets drug out for a month and ends with one match.
I just give me a tournament. I miss the King of the Ring done right. That's what I mean. That's what I miss.
But Hogan's interview done in front of the Don Cesar Hotel, where they filmed Thunder in Paradise.
Interesting.
Don Cesar.
Mm-hmm. That's what I said.
I like the name.
Is he? But I also liked how they said it was filmed on location in Clearwater, Florida. The Don Cesar's in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Well, only you would know that. So.
And that's your Florida geography moment here on Filter Free Podcast.
Don Cesar ain't in Clearwater, folk.
They were just hoping you weren't watching that episode of Superstars. Match 6.
Little Dave yelling at the TV.
Son of a bitch.
It's in Clearwater!
Tampa Bay baseball legends, the Devil Rays. Match 6. In a King of the Ring qualifier match, Giant Gonzalez with Harvey Whippleman takes on Tatanka. Pretty early on, Giant Gonzalez gets a chokehold and refuses to let go, so he's DQ'd. And your winner is still undefeated. That was literally the whole match. That was it.
Yes, the Giant Gonzalez was terrible. But everyone must admit that he was an impressive sight. I think he looked even scarier in that weird bodysuit than the black trunks he wore in WCW.
I will say it once on this show, and I will say it again. Giant Gonzalez at 8 years old scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. My little brother at church, when they asked something that scares him, he drew a picture of Giant Gonzalez.
That's fantastic.
If only he had just a little bit of talent, he could have been used for something more. But, God, he was terrible.
Worse, Giant Gonzalez, the great colleague, go.
Giant Gonzalez.
I mean, Great Khali made it a couple years at least, so gotta say Giant Gonzalez.
But the fact you had to think about it that hard.
Yeah, they both.
Yeah, neither was very good.
It's a race.
I think they might have given up on Gonzalez a little bit too quickly.
Probably.
When they could have used him sparingly as some kind of attraction.
They could have used him as the guy who just chloroformed people.
I wonder if WWF had, like, I know later they'd have the Dory Funk, Tom Pritchard training. I wonder if they had that here in 93.
They could have done something with him. I mean,
he was terrible.
But they kept talking about how Tatanka was still undefeated at this point. But he was getting absolutely squashed by the Giant Gonzalez.
Murdered.
He was also scared of Giant Gonzalez.
He said he wasn't in his interview.
He was lying.
He was
terrified.
Tatanka never even got him off his feet. He got a little bit of, he got a couple of his little tomahawk chops in. But that was it. Giant Gonzalez strapped those big ass hands around his throat, pushed down the referee, and that was all she wrote.
Yeah, Giant, not great. But his outfit makes it look like he needs to wipe. I mean, it's just lots of brown all over the back of his pants.
It's furry, though.
Well, maybe he takes furry shits.
You got to cut the hair around it.
Like fix your beehole, man. Fix your beehole.
Dingleberries.
Up next, we get a promo of the tag team champions, the Money Inc. After this, we get some more promos for the matches on next week's Superstars. That's how we go off the air.
But the promo section was called Face to Face. Is it really face to face if it's just one team?
Well, they were.
Maybe they were looking at each other.
Yeah, they were face to face. They kissed, actually, if you would have watched the whole thing.
Somebody's got to pay their taxes.
Under the table. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please let us know. Give us that 5-star review where we get this podcast. Make sure to follow the show on Twitter at FF Popcast, on Instagram at Filter Free Podcast. Follow our network. Leave us a review, Ram Sports Net on Twitter. As for us, you can find us on our social media platforms at Dollar Bill Dave. Actually, you're not on social media anymore.
Follow me. Don't follow me. I don't give a shit. I'm an ex-jail. At Dave in the HSV. Everybody Timmy tweet C. out free at Dave in the HSV.
Don't do that.
Timmy C.
At Timmy C 1979. I'm not in jail.
I'm not either. I'm at TC was 91. Next week, we're going to cover WWF In Your House 8, Beware of Dog from May 26, 1996. We covered this way back in the day, our second ever episode. I'm looking forward to doing this again. Until then, this has been the Filter Free Podcast, and so long for now.
Joke of the week. What's the leading cause of dry skin in America?
Lip cancer.
That's fair.
A towel.